Hey everyone, this is Adam Ellenboss from Nightlight Astrology. Today we are going to take a look at Venus's entrance into the sign of Capricorn because as soon as Venus enters the sign of Capricorn, she is immediately moving into a trine with Jupiter. Now Jupiter's in Taurus, which happens to be the home sign of Venus. Jupiter is also hanging out in the bound of Venus, which means that there is a ton of reception between Venus and Jupiter as they trine. Trines are of the nature of Jupiter, so there's just a very smooth connection between these two planets right now. I'm going to talk today about five things that people probably never think about with respect to Venus-Jupiter connections. They are subtle parts of what often presents itself when Venus and Jupiter get together in our experience. We will see these themes, but you may not even recognize them as Venus-Jupiter themes. Anyway, that's our goal for today. Before we get into it, don't forget to like and subscribe. Smash, press, hit the like button. I'm just playing. And share your comments. We'd love to hear from you guys. And then you can find a transcript of any of my daily talks on the website, nightlightastrology.com, where you should also check out the courses right now, year three, counseling astrology, masterclass series on the fixed stars, and roots and spheres. Our moon circle all started this month. Not too late to join in on any of those programs. And of course, if you need some assistance, we do have need-based tuition available for all of them. You can look at those things under the courses tab at nightlightastrology.com. And if you have any questions, feel free to email us info@nightlightastrology.com. All right, let's take a look at the real-time clock so we can get that little analytical piece of our day checked. Here we go. So Venus entering Capricorn, here's Tuesday, January 23rd, moving into the trine with Jupiter. So let's advance our clock one day at a time. You'll see that this application really gets started by Friday of this week, as does everything. It's like everything's happening over the weekend. And then we see the two of them actually coming together Sunday, January 28th into Monday, January 29th. So this is something you'll really experience as the week, as we get close to the weekend and then over the weekend, especially on Sunday. So a powerful sequence from Venus and Jupiter. You'll notice that as Venus is moving into that seventh degree, crossing over into the bound of Jupiter while Jupiter will be in the bound of Venus, that's mutual reception by bound rulership, which is significant. That's not nothing. And Jupiter, of course, is also in Venus's domicile. So we have some nice reception in a flowing, harmonious trine. Trines are of the nature of Jupiter. So you tend to see those two planets working together very constructively. In Earth signs, the key word is construction, in fact, where the planets connecting in Earth tend to move physical things around and move ideas into form. And so don't be surprised if this plays out in ways that are more tangible. I think it's interesting, and I think I've mentioned this to you guys. Right now, we're in the process of taking a room in the basement that was just kind of a playroom for our kids, but they have a main place they play, and they never play in this room. So we turned it into a room for making music and maybe doing some yoga and stuff like that. So we've been building this room out very slowly. Like, you guys know how it goes. It's like, have an idea of something you want to build, but you have two kids, give yourself a year. So anyway, it's been slowly building, but we're kind of finishing it right now. And I thought that's really interesting. You guys might remember I used the image of like building a porch for people to hang out, a bonfire pit for people to gather around, a garden for growing, you know, beautiful things or fruit and vegetables or whatever. There's something very Venusian about things that are being built right now. And I've talked about that at length over the past couple of weeks. Anyway, when Venus and Jupiter get together, there are five things I have on a list today that I want to share with you guys, which are not, I would just say that they're not things that most people would like look for, or you, if they are happening, you wouldn't necessarily go, oh yeah, that's Venus, Jupiter. But let's take a look at them. Five interesting things to note about Venus-Jupiter contacts. Now, this would be sort of regardless of what type of contact they have, although I would say with some of these, you'd see squares and oppositions as more appropriate. But for the most part, it's really any archetypal combination of these two planets. Here's number one, offensiveness, what we are offended by, taste, what is our individual personal taste? What do we like? What don't we like? And beauty all go together. One of the things that we forget is that Aphrodite, Venus, in ancient mythology and philosophy, was a goddess that was associated with justice and fairness. And when you think of the word, this is something I've said a bunch. You guys have listened to my channel, have heard me say this many times before. But when you think of the word cosmos, the root word for cosmos and cosmetic is the same. It means a well-arranged whole. So not one thing, but many things put together nicely in relation to one another, which is closer to the Greek, imagine the Greek-speaking world, the Hellenistic world, not just ethnically Greek, but the kind of that ancient Hellenistic world view of the cosmos. It's not a universe. It's not one thing. It's many different things arranged beautifully. And there's an inherent sense of truth, beauty, and justice that are all woven together in the arrangement of the cosmos, which is an aesthetic display. It's pleasing, it's beautiful, which is why, for example, when the Renaissance time comes around, you have this awakening, reawakening, one of the words that the word Renaissance means something like awakening. But one of the things that comes with the Renaissance is this reawakening of that ancient view of the cosmos, where math and music and art and painting and science are all, they're all interconnected much more closely than they are today. We tend to divide things. Even in a university, you know, you don't necessarily have I'm just thinking about like the science department versus the art department and the kinds of people that hang out. Sometimes you have some really meaningful crossover. You have lots of people, I'm sure, that are interested in both. But today we're not as interested in the way that we understand science in relation to art, in relation to math, in relation to music. And my favorite people are the ones who are doing that kind of work, obviously. And there are people, not to be like too black and white about it. But the point is that our view of the cosmos at the time that astrology is coming about is one where beauty, truth, fairness, and where there's a kind of a logical and an aesthetic quality that go together. This is why, by the way, Venus is ruler, not just Taurus, which is very much the sensual side of Venus, but also Venus also rules Libra, which is where Saturn is exalted and is much more like the interior designer, the architect, the high-minded, symmetrical, aesthetic arrangement plans, you know, like the blueprints of beauty. It's very Libran. So anyway, the point of all of this is just to say that we forget that Venus has a very long history of being associated with questions of fairness and balance in the sort of ideal realm of the archetypes, which moves into things like the scales of music and the blueprints of a cathedral and so on and so forth. The reason I say this is because Jupiter was associated with law. Now, there's always corrupt versions of law and authoritarianism, and law can be an instrument of suppression. But the ideal Jupiter in the ancient world, the ideal Zeus, is the lawgiver and the provider of unity. And that's reflected in human society in terms of things like the ideal way in which, you know, religion should function, or government, or education, and so on, the courts, and so on. So when Venus and Jupiter come together, you almost always get some level of conversation about what is offensive or what is considered to be virtuous. And that is because offensiveness, what we find offensive, like morally, it actually goes hand in hand with what we find beautiful or disgusting. Now, what's interesting about this is that just speaking to the shadow of Venus and Jupiter, it can amplify our sense that good behavior is beautiful, which is, you know, if you're getting the little feedback that like, hey, your best behaviors, you know, like your compassion, your patience, your self-care, all of the best virtuous behaviors are actually beautiful, and they make you shine. They make you they really give a kind of, they make you feel beautiful inside and out. So it's nice when we can feel like virtue and beauty go together. However, there is also a very clear way in which there is a level of subjectivity to Venus, and it's a very important level we should never think about doing away with. My taste is not your taste, is not Jane's taste, is not Jack's taste. Those are like the classic Jane and Jack. They're somewhere, there's like an Iowa skills test where Jane and Jack are doing every last thing in the quiz. Anyway, so your taste is not my taste, is not so-and-so's taste. And that is one of the things, that variety is the spice of life. It's nice to have diverse people. There are lots of different foods that we can like, colors that we may prefer, sounds of music that we may prefer. Preference is part of enjoyment, is part of life. However, what's interesting is that we frequently and very unconsciously associate what we don't like, our dislikes, with moral, like moral offensiveness. And that's not because we're just like jerks. It's because it's very, very natural for Venus and Jupiter to go together, insofar as what we find beautiful is connected very closely to how we realize or connect with virtue in our life. And now, that's not true for all people, but for many people, it is. For many people, beauty and goodness are very close together. And so, for example, if I want to be at my best, it's important that I be in contact with things that my soul finds beautiful, because it draws forth from within me. Not only, it's not just aesthetic and sensual. The aesthetic and sensual things that bring me happiness connect very innocently and naturally to all of those happiest, virtuous character qualities: compassion, peace, patience, forgiveness, harmony with my fellow, you know, people. And so, but what we don't understand is that there can be a way in which an individual's choice and taste and preferences that connect them personally to the feeling of virtue, to some of their best qualities, is still the best qualities may be universal, but the pathway to get there through what we find pleasurable or beautiful is sometimes highly subjective and relative. And that's weird, because on the one hand, compassion, forgiveness, harmonization, consideration, respectfulness, I mean, just think of all the best virtues, all the, you know, the best character qualities that we sort of universally agree upon as like, yeah, if we all acted this way, we might have a better world or something. Those qualities are sort of universal. They feel relatively more absolute to us. And yet the way in which we connect to them in the world is so often through individual subjective connections with what we find beautiful. And what we find beautiful is highly subjective and more, much more relative. And so there's this weird way in which we can equate our taste with virtue when they're not identical. In a sense, it's as though our taste leads us to virtue or connects us to the currents of virtue. But what does that mean? It means that when I'm offended, sometimes what I'm offended by is that someone doesn't have the same subjective taste or aesthetics, or they don't like the same color, in other words, that I do, or they don't like the same music, or they, you know what I mean? And their sensibilities, aesthetically, sensually, are sort of offended by choices that don't resemble their own or my own. And but then what we do is we connect that, we take a step further, and we accuse people of lacking virtue because they don't have the same taste as us. This is a Venus-Jupiter dynamic. It's a very subtle but very powerful thing that comes up even when they're in a trine to one another, because the trine can actually amplify the feeling that my taste is connected to the highest virtues, even though it's actually something more like my taste connects me to the highest virtues. Do you see what I mean? And this happens a lot. Like, there's so many times where I see when, you know, people have Venus, the Venus-Jupiter is in the air. Let me tell you an example of this, actually. So I have a friend, a longtime friend of mine, who I've known since high school, and initially actually started off as like an AOL Instant Messenger friend, like a pen pal that I talked with on AOL Instant Messenger back in the day. And then we just stayed in touch over the years, you know, and we're just connected as friends and have always been, I don't know, you know, once or twice a year, maybe we say hello, how are you doing, whatever. But this person absolutely loves Disney World. Like, they're just like a Disney World person. And they have actually gotten involved in some really interesting charitable causes through their love of Disney World. I find Disney World sort of offensive. I mean, let me tell you, when we took our kids there, and you guys may have heard me telling you guys about this, like, I had a good time at Disney World. I thought it was pretty fun because I got to live through the eyes of my children, basically. But otherwise, I was just sort of offended. And I did not feel particularly connected to the most virtuous parts of myself. It was easy for me to look at all of the people who were there taking tremendous aesthetic pleasure as being lacking in, like, what I would see as like morality or you know, sort of spiritual virtue. That's because I'm a jerk, not because do you get what I'm saying? Because we all have different, we connect to beauty differently. It is very tempting for Venus and Jupiter to get together and to be proud about one's aesthetic tastes and likes and dislikes, and to assume that if one does not have the same taste, it means they're actually lacking in virtue or morality, or that they're not right somehow in the sense of good and bad or good and evil. And so the connection between the two when Venus and Jupiter are together is very powerful and often very subtle. And that's the point. All right. So I hope that was interesting. Number two, sometimes beauty topples virtue. Okay. Let's just be real. Have you ever, and I'm not calling out anyone in particular, because you could call me out just as well, I'm sure. Beauty sometimes needs to topple virtue. Have you ever been with someone where their sense of goodness is so strong and overriding that they're unpleasant to be around? And I'm not talking about, like, you know, someone who's clearly like a puritanical, like, for example, you know, I imagine like a Southern Baptist preacher or something, like, you know, quite clearly for many of us being around such a person, it would be like, okay, you're puritanical and I just like can't handle being around you. But think of someone more complex than that. Think of a friend, someone you really like, but they're, I don't know, whether they're like, maybe they're vegan. I would say the closest thing I can think about in my life would be, not all of my vegan friends, and I've been vegan at times in my life, but some of my vegan friends where, and I don't mean to pick on vegans. Oh God, no, I mean, shit. Okay, whatever. Think of anyone who has some moral standard that is admirable. You can actually appreciate, right? You can be like, that moral standard is a good one. But somehow the way they carry it is like they seem to not be able to enjoy themselves because the mantle of their goodness is too heavy to do so. So I'm not saying I'm not trying to generalize and say that that's what vegans are. I was just thinking of a few of my friends historically. It was the first thing that popped into my mind, so please forgive me. But what I am talking about is, you know, anyone that has, maybe it's political, right? It's like political goodness. And you're like, that is admirable, but my God, you can't enjoy dinner. Do you know what I mean? And this is me too. Like, I can identify this in myself. That's why I said, I don't mean to call out anyone in particular, because you could call out me. There are things like, if you get me riled up about, you know, good astrology versus crap pop astrology or something like that, it's like, if I get going about that, you'll be like, do you feel okay in your body right now? You know what I mean? There are times where beauty needs to topple virtue. It is fascinating to me that Venus is in a superior trine to Jupiter, and Jupiter is being hosted by Venus. There's a mutual reception by term that they have, so they're working together, but Venus is in the overcoming or superior position, which is a way that ancient astrologers had of looking at which planet has more influence over the other. When Venus tends to influence Jupiter, sometimes it'll say, tone down your morality for the sake of beauty or sensuality. Sometimes it'll actually topple virtue for the sake of pleasure, which isn't always a good thing either. But the point is that sometimes beauty needs to push goodness down a bit and say, look, if you're not enjoying yourself, if you're not in some connection with the pleasure body, then your morality is probably suppressive, you know, or repressive. So Just remember, one of the things that sometimes comes up when Venus and Jupiter connect in any aspect is that beauty will need to topple virtue. On the other hand, the opposite can be true. Sometimes virtue needs to speak up, and Venusian desires and sensual pleasure need to make sure they're in right relationship with virtue. It's like hedonism, materialism, and sort of morality. There's a dance between the two. But in this case, I would say, don't be surprised if beauty is saying, hey, I'm as important. I'm an equal player. Just because beauty is enjoyable, it's sort of like the idea that Venus wouldn't be an equal player with Jupiter is sort of like saying that goodness is more important than pleasure. I think that's risky, personally. I think that the universe is meant to be enjoyed, and that thinking that pleasure is a bad thing is maybe worse than the pleasure itself. But I don't know. It's just my thoughts. 3, effort and desire go together. When we have two planets connecting like this in an Earth sign, Venus and Jupiter, especially in the sign of Mars's exaltation, Venus in Capricorn, Saturn ruled sign in Capricorn, and connecting with Jupiter in Taurus, who likes to build things that are stable and enjoyable. Right now, you can think about whatever we think is worth our effort, our work, is usually connected to something we desire. And so even work, discipline, focus, concentration, effort, practical building and development of things are usually going to be related to things that we see as beautiful and worth the effort. You don't cook a meal purely, most of us don't cook a meal purely to fuel our body. We cook a meal to fuel our body, which is maybe a sort of utilitarian or, it's a sort of practical end. But we also try to create fuel that is enjoyable. And we're looking for the balance of enjoyment and healthy fuel. So effort and desire always go together. And Venus and Jupiter will often show us where what we want, what we're building, and what we desire are together. They have to work together, or we need to get them to work together if they're not. 4, environmental beauty is crucial. There's nothing more offensive than being in a work environment, in a building where there's no light, there's no plants, there's no color, there's no green. I think that Hillman mentioned this a lot. I think that one of the things that is making us sick mentally, emotionally, and there's many things, but one of them is probably that a lot of the design of our cities, common spaces, office buildings are just depressing. There's not enough green. It's like city, and then outside of city, nature. And it always catches my eye when I see, one of those, the overpass on a highway, just like greened out. You've seen people do this. So one of the things that we may also notice when Venus and Jupiter get together, because Jupiter is ideally about social cohesion and Venus is about beauty, social cohesion without the incorporation of what is aesthetic, that's going to kill the soul. So there's a soul-sucking quality to the way in which, whether it's architecture, city planning, it's something you may notice, even if it's not on the level of a city, but it's your office or your home or a room. If it's not beautiful, it doesn't, like, the functionality without the beauty, it's a big deal that those two things get together. That's all I'm trying to say. So you may notice that. 5, good people are particularized people. When we think about, I was just having this conversation with Ashley. We were talking about who our own models of good people are. And by good, I mean, we were talking about people that are older than us by maybe 10, 20 years. And throughout our lives, people that have been older than us. And what are the qualities that we look at and we say, that's a person that I want to be like? Not just like because of what they have or what they've achieved, but because of some kind of soul quality. They strike us as a good person, in addition to maybe being talented or, beautiful or whatever. It's just like they wear their own little halo. You know what I mean? You probably know people like that, that you go, yeah, I like that person. I like that person. There's something about them that makes me feel like there's a best part of me too. Anyway, good people are particularized people. Particularized, how do we become, I use the word particular rather than individual, because there's something about individual that's just offensively monotheistic at times. And I'm not anti-monotheism, but just, my God, you know, sometimes we're just like everything, we're just, everything has to be about oneness. I am a one whole individual. You know, I've individuated. I'm a whole. Do you know what I mean? You ever get that way? Nah, I get tired of it. So particularize. What does particularize mean? It means that there are like, Ashley calls it her itty bitty shitty committee. And I don't know, I think she heard that somewhere too, but it's like a little, if you were to internal family systems, you know, there's like a host of different voices and aspects and parts of yourself. And if you spend time getting to know all of the different facets of yourself, you recognize that there's like a, there's a mother, right? And then there's a raging, frustrated woman who doesn't identify with being a mother, even though there's another mother on the committee. You know what I mean? So anyway, the point is that what we finally identified as, you know, unique to the people that we really admire is that they're particularized. They know all the different parts of themselves. They all have voice and room. And there might be something like a wise leader who helps organize and facilitate, doesn't let any one voice dominate too much. But no one's left out. No one's pushed out. No one's kicked out. And from such people, you just get this feeling like, that's so-and-so, you know? There, I was talking in particular about an herbalist friend named Jesse that we have. And I was like, you know, whenever I'm around Jesse, it's just like, Jesse, there's no one trying to be present. There's no one, there's no one trying to be mindful. There's no one trying to be an herbalist. You know, there's no one trying to be anything. When I'm around this person, it's just, hey, there's Jesse. This is so Jesse. And doesn't mean that we don't have hidden parts of ourselves or unconscious. We always have things that are emerging and, you know, but what I'm saying is that the people that really stand out to me, like when I, in this case of this herbalist friend, it's just, this person has spent a lot of time getting to know and treasure and appreciate and laugh at and be, you know, probably get befuddled and frustrated with all of these different elements of their psychic life. And they've developed a taste for the different parts of themselves. You know what I mean? And that's so much better than being like, well, there's this one part that he's really problematic and I've got to solve him morally. I've got to upgrade this other part of me spiritually. But instead it's just like, well, I've spent time getting to know. You remember when I was a kid, I would go to summer camps. There was always like a stinky kid. There was like a kid who talked all the time. There was a kid who was like the most popular. And there was just, but by the end, what I always loved about summer camp is by the end, we were just one big collection of fools, you know, with like wet towels and swimsuits that stunk. Do you know what I mean? So one of the things that I like about Venus Jupiter is that when you think about goodness with Jupiter, it tends to be very cohesive. It's like the pillars that prop up the Supreme Court. Jupiter has that sense of clean and wholesomeness to it. And it's associated with things like emperors and empresses and like that's lofty. But when you think about Venus, Venus is really like, you know, you've got like, what's his name? Jackson Pollock. Was that his name? The kind of, I want to call it splatter painting. I know that's really offensive, but like, and then you've got like Picasso, and then you've got like, think about all the different artists and think about all the different people and their quirks and traits and the dark humor that you need to somehow embrace them all. Do you know what I mean? Good people are particularized people. They're people who have developed a taste for the many different facets of themselves, not monotheistic monads walking around being individualized, you know, or present or whatever. you know, that's important. It's important that we maybe have access to those, to being present or mindful or what have you, to a sense of there being a whole self. But there's also something about someone who's just sort of thrown together all of the parts and pieces, and they have some sense of aesthetic appreciation and laughter and humor and frustration with all of them. And you get the feeling with when you're in the presence of such a person that they're good, not because they have some kind of cohesive moral or spiritual presentation of consciousness, but because they're sort of managing the ship of fools well enough, and it's beautiful. It's beautiful to behold. And there's some sense about such a person that they're good. Do you know what I mean? Anyway, I say that because Venus Jupiter is a combination of the kind of cohesive monotheistic goodness of Jupiter, along with the diverse, you know, the palette of different colors and mixtures that Venus always points us to. So anyway, a fun exercise today, thinking about Venus and Jupiter. I hope that it gets you in the mood to notice their combination in the sky in the week to come. That is it for today, and we will see you again tomorrow. Take it easy, everyone. Bye.